My name is Sue Bolin. I'm on staff with Probe Ministries, which is a Christian worldview and apologetics ministry. And our passion is to free Christians from their cultural captivity. If you're like most Christians, you are like a cucumber that's put in a pickling brine over a number of months. A cucumber just sits there in pickling brine, and it just absorbs the flavors in the pickling brine, and it is no longer a cucumber, it becomes a pickle. And so if you're just sitting there in the world's messages and values over a period of time, you become a pickle, and you are culturally captive. Our goal and passion is to help Christians be transformed by the renewing of their minds by learning to think biblically and to connect what the Bible has to say with all kinds of areas of the culture. It's not just about theology. It's what does the Bible have to say about science, about history, about reality, and in my case, sexuality. When it comes to ACSI, I'm the sex lady. And what I bring to the table is, particularly with this topic of helping teens understand homosexuality, I bring 10 years of experience in homosexual ministry, helping people leave their unwanted same-sex desires and ministering to the families of those who identify as gay or who are actively struggling against it. So what I share with you is not information that I've picked up out of books, although I certainly do my share of reading there, but we're talking about my experience with people who are dear friends and heroes who are standing against the impulses of their flesh because they want to honor God. But every year I do this talk on helping teens understand this whole issue of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, the GLBT acronym. It gets bigger and bigger as the need grows more and more pronounced because our teens are sitting there pickling in the society's messages that gay is cool, gay is natural, people are born gay. You owe it to yourself to find out if you're gay or not. And how are you going to know who you are? You got to be real. And so, of course, our Christian kids are being bombarded with the exact same messages. They may be in a Christian school a few hours a day, but they live in a culture that has them immersed in pickle juice. And so what I want to do is share with you, from God's perspective, how to view homosexuality and some very practical suggestions on how do you help kids who either struggle with same-sex desires or kids who don't struggle but certainly have a position on homosexuality, how do you help bring that around so that it honors God? But first, I want to tell you about our sponsoring organization, Probe Ministries, which is a Christian worldview and apologetics ministry. This is a view of our website, probe.org, and I strongly want to encourage you to use us as a resource. We have over 1,200 articles on a wide range of topics. As you can see, there's everything from current issues and cults and world religions to faith and culture, faith and politics, faith and science, faith and sexuality. How do you connect a biblical perspective with all these various topics? And half of our website actually consists of answers to emails from real people that have come in. We are a tremendous resource for both teachers and students. We actually have an entire section on homosexuality, and so if you're sitting there in your classroom or your counseling office and somebody comes in and you go, I know I went to that seminar, but I don't remember what she said, please come check out these articles. And also, I want you to know that we have a twice-monthly free email newsletter called the Probe Alert, where we give you links to the newest stuff on our website, things that we think you will find helpful in developing your own Christian worldview. If you come by the Probe table out at the exhibit hall, give me your email address and I'll sign you up. Let me tell you where we're going with this session. First of all, we're going to talk about the lies that students are hearing and the sexual pressure that they are under because our world keeps getting darker and darker and the enemy keeps expanding his influence. We're going to talk about the role of gender confusion as it pertains to this issue of homosexuality and helping students think Christianly about this issue, How do you deal with teens who already identify themselves as gay, lesbian, or bi? And then how do we specifically show grace and compassion to strugglers and those who love them, which hopefully would be everybody? First of all, let's talk about the lies they hear. This is the pickle juice that our students are immersed in. First of all, what you're hearing is the result of a very definite and actually written out agenda for normalizing homosexuality in the culture, is that homosexuality is normal and healthy. It's just a variant on heterosexuality. It's in the same category as what flavor of ice cream do you prefer, vanilla or chocolate? That is a lie from the pit of hell, because our sexuality is so bound up in our spiritual awareness and identity. We are body, soul, and spirit. And if you believe lies about sexuality, a whole lot of other things are involved. Paul put sexual sin into a different category because the impact on the soul is so much greater than something like shoplifting, for example. So the lie is that homosexuality is normal and healthy. The truth is, it is neither normal nor healthy. The fact that it does occur, and despite what you may have heard of a 10% occurrence in the population, that has been proven a number of times to be false. It came from Kinsey's very faulty research. It's actually more like 2% of the population experiences same-sex desires. The fact that it occurs doesn't make it normal. And the reason we can say that is because from a Christian worldview, we know that God created a perfect creation, and then sin entered the world and stuff fell apart. And the impact of sin on the world is that it everything broke and everything crumpled. And so the fact that people are attracted to those of the same sex instead of the opposite sex is a factor of the fact that we live in a fallen world. It is not about God's normality. There's, if we look at the biological aspects of sex, if totally taking what God has said, the special revelation, off the table, if you look at male and female bodies and male and female emotional relationships, the way that we connect and complement each other, you can see that totally apart from the moral aspect, the biology and the psychology of male-female relationships shows us what is the way it's supposed to be. One time I was speaking in a class on gender stuff at SMU, and I made this point that totally, if you take the Christian aspect out of it altogether, look at the male-female, the fact that they're male and female are clearly designed to fit together. The parts fit with male and female. They don't fit with female-female or male-male. And the head of the gay and lesbian, bi and transgender students on campus said, "There is no part of my body that connects with the male physiology. That's not what I am all about." And I just thought, sweetie, you are so deceived. You know, you have to work really hard at the mental gymnastics to get away from the pieces don't fit aspect of sexuality. When someone experiences same-sex desires, it's like the red light on the dashboard of a car. It says something's wrong under the hood, you need to check it out. It is a signal that something has gone wrong somewhere and it needs to be investigated. It's not just a normal and natural event. Acting on same-sex attractions is not, we said it was not normal, it is also not healthy, because those who engage in same-sex behaviors physically, sexually, act out, are at far greater risk for STDs, especially AIDS. Now, you don't hear about AIDS as much as you did because of the development of drugs that temper it, but they do not cure it. They don't. They help people manage it, but the STDs in the sexually active population are huge. Those who engage in homosexuality are at far greater risk for alcoholism and drug abuse. Depression is just a natural part of experiencing same-sex desires, because it's actually, the same-sex desires are just a symptom of a root problem. And what's causing the depression is causing this the is connected to what's causing the same-sex desires. It's lies that people believe about life, about themselves, about their parents, about God, about other people. And so the fact that there's a huge problem with depression and therefore suicidal beliefs in those who are really struggling, when people say, and I have gotten this email directly, you, the blood of suicidal teens is on your hands, lady, because you tell them that it's wrong to be gay. And you are responsible for the fact that so many gay teens kill themselves. And my response to that is, you know, I'm just agreeing with God who designed sexuality and says, this is not what I intended. The fact that people are locked into believing lies, which causes the depression, and then goes on to help with having suicidal ideation, is not about believing the truth about homosexuality. Let's talk about what's fueling the depression in the first place. What also the whole gay is cool message in our culture does not tell people is about how emotionally exhausting same-sex relationships are. Whether it's two guys or two girls, they're emotionally exhausting because there's this huge hole in the heart, and people try to stuff other people in that hole. And it's a God-shaped hole, and nobody can fill a God-shaped hole except God himself. So when you try to keep making other people fill those holes in your heart, it's emotionally exhausting to try to keep telling yourself, this is working, when it's not working. And there's also, for at least for men, there is a far greater risk of a shortened lifespan for those that are acting out physically on their same-sex desires because of the fact that there's a whole lifestyle that goes along with gay behavior, and it's very self-destructive. The far greater involvement in alcohol and in drugs, smoking, and just the stress that comes from trying to maintain a stable same-sex relationship when that's not what God intended. The second lie that students hear is that if you experience same-sex attraction, that means you're gay or lesbian. Let me explain to you from our perspective, being involved in ex-gay ministry for a long time, our understanding of what's going on when people experience same-sex attractions. And there are a lot of students who do. Let me just tell you that with the epidemic of fatherlessness, whether the dad is not in the home physically or if he's emotionally uninvolved and unavailable, which is another aspect of fatherlessness, the importance of the dad is absolutely huge in both boys and girls. And there is such a crying need in our students, and this is one of the aspects in which the brokenness people break in different directions. You can break in heterosexual promiscuity, you can break in homosexual desires. If somebody experiences crushes on somebody of the same sex, it doesn't mean they're gay or lesbian. What it means is that God has given them legitimate needs. There's three A's we talk about: attention, affection, and approval. And God's intention is that we receive that first from our parents, and then we go on to receive them from same-sex peers, and then we can go on to a healthy relationship with opposite-sex peers. If those God-given needs are not met, we're going to try to get them met however we can. And when somebody is stuck in their development, they're going to be drawn to their same-sex peers and not go on to being drawn to opposite-sex peers because of a case of arrested development. When students say, you know what, when girls say I like girls and guys say I like guys, it simply means I haven't finished growing up yet. But that's not what you hear in the culture. It is really, really simple. It's not easy to fix, but it is a simple explanation. One of the things that students need to hear is that intense crushes on other people, especially those of the same sex, is a normal part of the transition from child to adult. That's one of the ways that God meant for us to grow up. In order to learn to have an intense attachment to somebody of the opposite sex, first you have to have an intense attachment to your mom, then an intense attachment to your dad, and then an intense attachment to your same-sex peers, and then the final development is an intense attachment to the opposite sex. if it gets interrupted anywhere in that process, because for a variety of reasons, you stay stuck there until those needs are met, and then you can move on. What I've never heard anybody say in the culture, in terms of the media, is that if you experience intense crushes, it's just part of growing up, and you will get past this as long as you continue to have healthy community as God intended. I was speaking at a conference that we do to help students get ready for college so that they're not blown away by the lies of the culture when they get to college. And I was speaking on homosexuality and explaining about this. And afterwards, a high school senior came up to me and he said, "I have never heard anybody tell me that the fact that I have crushes on other guys is just a normal part of my development, and that if I will just keep finishing growing up, I'll be okay. I was beginning to think the reality is that I'm gay. And suddenly, you know, what I heard from you is I haven't finished growing up yet. And I just want you to know that for the first time in several years, I have peace about the fact that I'm not finished yet." And then several months later, he contacted me and goes, "Remember what I told you about that? I haven't even struggled since you gave me that light bulb moment of realizing I just need to just relax and finish growing up. I'm not gay. I'm just not done yet." It's like, oh, thank you, Lord. I love that. Let me insert this part in the about the question, is it a sin to be gay, into the section on the lies they believe, because this is a question that comes up for Christian students, those in Christian schools. Is it a sin to be gay? Is that what God thinks? Is it true? Well, first of all, we need to understand that gay is an invented term. It's not biblical. It's not even true, because the real meaning of gay means happy, carefree, a delightful state of being, and that is the opposite of the reality of someone who struggles with same-sex attraction. What kids need to hear is that to experience same-sex desires means you are being tempted. It's not a sin to be tempted. The Lord Jesus was assailed with every possible temptation known to man, Hebrews tells us, and yet he withstood all those temptations and was successful at standing against them. And so we can trust him to stand within us to fight against those temptations. It is not a sin to be tempted. The sin comes in acting on the temptations and giving in. And the great example of that is in Genesis 4, where God says to Cain, "Cain, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you," meaning it desires to control you, "but you must master it." And the Lord is saying to Cain, stand against the temptations. Now, the great thing that Christian students have that Cain did not is the indwelling Holy Spirit. And having walked a number of women out of their lesbian desires and fighting against that, you know, that's what I'm all about. You have got to hang on to Jesus for all it's worth and call on him. The same power that raised Christ from the dead is available to help you stand against your temptations. You don't have to give in. And every time you give in, you're making it that much harder to get out of it. But Jesus was raised from the dead and makes that power available to us. Use it. Draw on it. It's just part of the normal Christian life. Okay, back to the lies they hear. Number three, since you were born that way, you can't change. First of all, ask people, how do you know that people are born gay? Where's the science of it? You know, we just fall down and worship science and scientists in our culture. There is no scientific evidence of a genetic cause for homosexuality. They keep looking for it. It's not there. It's just that the lie keeps getting repeated in the culture so often. And as you know, if you repeat a lie loud enough and long enough, people believe it, and they believe it's the truth. Even if there were a genetic component to homosexuality, it would still be sin to act on it. For example, for those that have a genetic weakness for alcohol, it is incumbent upon them to stand against that weakness and not give in to what the Bible calls us to not go for drunkenness. You know, it calls us to remain sober in spirit. So if somebody says, "I can't help it, I have a gene for alcoholism," it's still your choice whether you pick up the bottle and drink it or not. And even if someone did have a genetic weakness for homosexuality, which I do not believe they will ever find, by the way, it is still your decision to, first of all, give in to the temptation to lust, because the sin happens first in the head, and secondly, to get into bed with somebody. That's still your choice. It's the same choice as an alcoholic picking up a bottle. Also, thousands of people, there may be more, we don't know, report significant change in their same-sex attractions. I have even been a bridesmaid in a wedding of a man who came through the ministry that I serve with, married one of my friends. He had been as full-blown into the gay lifestyle as you can possibly get. And yet, as he pursued Christ, pursued intimacy with Christ, worked on the causes of his same-sex desires in the first place, the Lord brought healing to him. There will always be weakness there. The enemy knows where we are weak. And the Lord allows us to maintain weaknesses so that we will cling to him in that area. And it will always be a reliable source of temptation when we're stressed. The enemy is always going to go for that. However, so many people have experienced very significant changes in their same-sex, the intensity of their same-sex attractions. For some, it's completely gone away. For others, it's just diminished. Instead of being this roaring tsunami of controlling their lives, it becomes something like a gnat flying around their head. And that was their description, not mine. So the fact is that change is possible. And that's exactly what we would expect based on what the Bible says. Because 1 Corinthians 6:11 has that phrase, "Such were some of you," and that includes homosexual people who acting out on their homosexuality. There were ex-gays in the church at Corinth, as there were ex-idolaters and ex-adulterers and ex-thieves and all kinds of people who had left their sinful behaviors behind. Biblically, this is exactly what we would expect because, again, the same power that raised Christ from the dead is available to help us fight against our proclivities. The fourth lie that the students hear is embrace and celebrate your gay identity because it's cool to be gay. But you don't ever hear the heartbreaking stories of the truth, which is the way Satan works, doesn't he? He dangles out such an attractive bait, but he doesn't tell you about the deathly barb on the hook that's inside the bait. You never hear about the fact that same-sex relationships are intense and very, very difficult. You never hear about the relational patterns of disillusionment and breakups, especially for guys, because girls tend to be more stable for another, well, what we would call stable. It's just highly dysfunctional. But for men, what there is intense attraction and this very excited connection of, you must be Mr. Right. You are the answer to my heart's desires. And then there's the disillusionment because no man can fulfill that. And then there's the breakup. So there's attraction, disillusionment, breakup. And then they go into the next round with more and more people. Nobody tells you about that. It is very unusual to find long-term partners in the male gay community. As a matter of fact, they've done a study looking to prove that gays and lesbians can have just as happy, healthy, and functional long-term relationships as married people, and they can't find it because it isn't there. Among men, it's not there. As a matter of fact, of those who had been together over 7 years, when they asked how many have a faithful, monogamous relationship, of all the men that this study investigated, could not find one single relationship that was faithfully monogamous. So they talk about emotional monogamy. I give my heart to one man, but I go and have sex with a lot of other people on the side. And my question would be, can you find any married couples who would be more than happy with that definition of monogamy? They don't talk about the physical and emotional unhealthiness that is inherent in trying to connect with same-same instead of same-difference. God intends for the complementarity of male and female to balance each other and to bring the best out in each other. And so when you try to put two males together or two females together, it's not healthy physically, particularly for men, and it's not healthy emotionally. It's definitely not healthy spiritually. And then countless people have said that they wish they'd never entered the gay community in the first place, but it's awfully hard to leave. And a big reason for that is that so many of those who get into the gay community are marginalized. They feel like they're on the fringe. They've never been accepted to begin with. And so when you get in the gay community and it's all about acceptance and we're here for you and we're your friends, and it's kind of like walking into the Cheers bar that, you know, on the TV show, that's pretty exciting. You should be able to find that in the church. That's what God's intention is. You go to a place where you can know and be known, to be accepted and celebrated. But so many people find that in the gay community, at least for a while. Particularly with men, you have to be young and good-looking in order for, you know, for things to work well for you. It's a bad thing to be growing old in the gay community if you're a man. Don't have time to go there. You can talk to me about that specifically later if you want. Students, all students, are under a lot of sexual pressure in our culture because part of the pickle principle of sitting there absorbing the world's values is our number one value is sexual pleasure. And there's this lie in the culture that says, I have a right to experience sexual pleasure. I have a right to any kind of sexual experience because sexual experience is the most important value in life. And students are just sitting there in a sex-saturated culture, whether you are listening, watching TV, listening to songs, watching YouTube. You know what kinds of stuff comes into computer screens. The whole culture is sex-saturated. It's just part of having a social life. This past week, Dr. Phil had a program that was highlighting a documentary and book called Oral Sex is the New Goodnight Kiss. This is your students, okay? The fact that you teach in a Christian school means nothing in terms of protecting kids from the lies of the enemy and the messages of the world, because it's just as easy for kids to go into the bathroom and for the girls to service the guys with oral sex in a Christian school as it is in a public school. And we, believe me, we hear in the ministry that I volunteer with, we hear about it. There is no difference in the Christian schools and the public schools. You'd think that, you know, it's a Christian school, so the enemy stays outside. All the demons and Satan just stays outside the walls of the school because it's a Christian school. And don't you know, our students, our children and our students walk around with a target painted front and back. So they're in a sex-saturated culture. And students never hear the heart-wrenching consequences of being sexually active. They just get the pressure. If you want to be accepted, you've got to play the game. You've got to engage in this kind of behavior. They're also listening to the lies that come from an agenda of sexual freedom that pushes homosexuality as this normal, natural variation in sexual acting out. And what's new, we have never seen in the culture before, but within the last 10 years, what is new is a new pressure to decide early if you're straight, gay, or bi. As a matter of fact, we're getting junior high students and middle school students are getting this kind of pressure. Let me hit the pause button there and just say that a number of years ago, what they've started discovering is epidemics of gonorrhea of the throat in middle school girls. And you know where they're getting it from? Giving oral sex to middle school boys. That's the kind of crazy sex-saturated culture we live in. You know, and it's just so easy to think, oh, that's probably happening on the other side of the world, and it's probably happening within 5 miles of where you live. It's so incredibly sad. But in addition to this sense that sex is just part of being human, we're also getting new, the students are now getting this pressure to decide early on about your sexual orientation. There was a landmark study made in Minnesota not very many years ago, that they discovered that they started asking 12-year-olds, they did a longitudinal study, started asking 12-year-olds, are you gay, straight, bi, or transgender? Think about 12-year-olds, okay? We still have to tell them to wipe their bottoms and brush their teeth. But that's the pressure that they're under because kids are asking them all over the internet. People are being asked this. Well, 1/4 of 12-year-olds were unsure of their sexual orientation. at age 12. Okay? 5 years later, they asked the exact same kids. At age 17, only 5% were unsure of their sexual orientation. Of those 5%, 4.5% said they had same-sex attractions, that their heart was kind of drawn to kids of the same sex. Now remember, this is age 17. These kids are still a long way from finishing growing up. 2.6% said that they engaged in same-sex fantasies. This is not acting out, just it going on in the head. And only 1% of those kids, of that 5%, said that they engaged in same-sex behaviors. It's not everywhere. It's not that rampant in terms of acting out. But particularly, what you see is that give it time, things resolve. As a matter of fact, Dr. Jeffrey Satinover, a medical doctor who has been really studying this whole issue, says, without any intervention whatsoever, 3 out of 4 boys who think they're gay at age 16, aren't by 25. So if we're going to treat homosexuality as a state, then 75% of, quote, gays become, quote, non-gay spontaneously. That's a statement which I consider ludicrous. But if you accept this tacit proposition that being gay is an actual state, like being short or being tall, black or white, then in 3 out of 4 people, that condition changes itself spontaneously. That's with no outside intervention, just the natural processes of development. This is one of the reasons I'm so glad you are in this seminar, so that you know this, about sexuality takes a couple of decades to resolve itself, particularly in view of the sexually confusing messages that our students are getting. So here's a word of grace to give to students. Particularly if you can do it in an indirect way, meaning you're giving it to a whole bunch of students all at once. It's too soon to, quote, declare a major in your sexuality. You don't have to choose a college major or a career track this early, 12 years old, early high school. Well, you don't have to make a decision about your sexuality either. And I think it would be really helpful to actually lift out this lie from the enemy, because that's who's fueling these lies in the culture, to say, choose your major. Choose your sexuality major. Decide now if you're gay, straight, bi, or transgender. Decide now. And you can tell them, no, don't decide now. And like, if you're 14, 15, 16, we're not going to ask you to choose a spouse either. So just put all of that aside, okay? And the reason you want to do that is because experimenting is not the only way that you can know about your sexuality. Just finish growing up. I just think it's fascinating that within the last several years that they've discovered that teenage brains just go through this rewiring. It's kind of like they harden and solidify and they gel, but it doesn't finish till age 25. And the last place that gels in the teenage brain is the prefrontal cortex, which determines the long-term consequences of your choices. Which means that when junior high and high school kids, and college kids too, engage in sexual behavior, it has lifelong consequences. Because sex is meant to be the super glue that holds a husband and wife together. If you start trying to do super gluing yourself to all these other people, you're going to have all kinds of consequences. It's fascinating to me that they realize it's age 25 is when the brain is finished. For years, that's been the cutoff rate for rental car companies to rent to under age 25 people. That's when the insurance rates drop, right? At age 25, why? Because at age 25, you actually are an adult. Your brain is an adult, and you stop doing such dumb, risky, risk-taking behaviors. You know, They say that there's, when they start putting black boxes in cars and they can check what happens in the car just before a crash, that in Texas, where I'm from, what they mainly hear right before a crash is, here, hold this. Bam. Because students are doing risky behaviors, it's just part of growing up. Well, if that risky behavior includes sex, you're in trouble. So students need to be encouraged, know the sexual pressures that you're under and stand against them. Several years ago, I was at a conference that was being led by Andy Comiskey with Desert Streams Ministries. And this man and his Living Waters program has been responsible for more people's sexual healing than anything I'm aware of. And he was in the gay community for a number of years before he decided to turn back to Christ and pursue intimacy with Jesus full on, and the Lord brought healing to him. And he, in turn, has been turning it around and blessing other people with healing since then. And I went up to him, and he mentioned something painful that happened in high school or junior high, I can't remember which. And I went up to him afterwards, and I said, Andy, if you could rewrite that painful time that you were talking about, what he had told us was that although he had never given any indication that he was gay, suddenly he went into class one day, and someone had put on the board, Andy Comiskey is gay, or Andy Comiskey is a fag. And there were other students who apparently there was some sort of plan to really embarrass this guy, and so somebody had put it on several different places. Andy Comiskey's a fag. And he saw that and his heart sank. He was mortified because A, it wasn't true, and B, he had never done anything to indicate that. But he went out and just hid from it and decided, if they call me a fag, it must be true. And that's when he made the decision to go and pursue that lifestyle. So I went up to him and I said, if you could rewrite the script for that hurtful day that sent you on such a destructive life path, what would you do differently? And he said, I would give anything if there were adults in my life, in my school and in my church, who had told me and the other students, teenage years are a time of sexual confusion. Don't act on it. And it's sexual insecurity. Because what you need to do is finish growing up until you have confidence in your masculinity and confidence in your femininity. I had no confidence in my masculinity. I didn't get that male imprint from my dad, which is true of almost all the guys in our ministry. It's like there's that signet ring that a king has on the in wax. They didn't get that from their dads. They didn't get it from, let's say, a coach or a male figurehead in their lives. So they go around looking to get it from other men. He finally got it, the place where God gives it to those who miss it, which is in the church. And that's why I so love when men come to ACSI conferences, because the male voice is so incredibly strong when it comes to imprinting masculinity on it. On a boy, because we don't have what it takes as women. There's no way we can impart masculinity to boys because we don't have it. We can support it, we can confirm it, but we cannot imprint it. And Andy was saying, I had no gender security because I had nobody giving me my man card and saying, you belong in the world of men. And so that's why I love the power that male teachers have to look a boy in the eyes and say, I believe in you. You belong in the world of men. You've got what it takes. You plus Jesus have what it takes. So gender insecurity is a big issue that fuels so much of the confusion. Let me explain to you what God has shown me, and it just makes so much sense with reality about a gender spectrum in terms of understanding masculinity and femininity. So many times people think, well, there's this one spectrum and with masculinity on one end and femininity on the other. I don't think that's the way we're made, because in Genesis 1, it says that God made the male and female. And my observation of watching people for a long time, and I'm 56 years old, so I've got a long time to look, is that there are two spectra. There's a masculinity spectrum and there's a femininity spectrum. And children come out of the womb at some point that God chooses on this spectrum. For boys, on the one end, there's the all-American, rough-and-tumble kind of boy who loves to get dirty and climb trees and is obsessed with balls and sports and getting dirty, all that stuff. And on the other end of the spectrum, much smaller part of the population, are the aesthetic, instead of athletic, you've got the aesthetic boys, creative, sensitive, emotionally sensitive, love to talk to people, would rather stay inside with books. These are our performing artists, our musicians, the different kinds of arts. I have one of each. I have two sons. One was all-American rough and tumble boy. The other graduated with a degree in art education. You know, he's an artist. And in our culture, and then you've got everything in between. You've got somebody that's right in the middle. You know, you can be anywhere on the spectrum. But there's a small, much smaller percentage of those that are the emotionally sensitive, creative ones. Now, there's absolutely no indication that there's anything wrong with this type of masculinity. As a matter of fact, in Exodus 31, Moses talks about, I should say, the author talks about how Bezalel and Aholiab were two men who were supernaturally gifted to create all kinds of beautiful, glorious designs for the tabernacle, including embroidery. Now, there's nothing in the indicated there in the text that, you know, people went, ooh, gay boys, you know, that because because they were gifted designers, craftsmen, artisans, you know. These are the ones that Dennis Jernigan, who is a musician who has written a lot of the songs that many of us sing in church, who was in the homosexual lifestyle for a number of years until the Lord brought healing to him. He says, these are the Davids of the church. These are the psalmists, the songwriters, the musicians. And Satan goes after them because they bring so much depth and beauty to worship and to the church. And the enemy goes after them because there's nothing intrinsic about being emotionally sensitive, creative. Actually, what my perspective is that when these boys are supported in their masculinity, the kind of masculinity it is, which is creative, emotionally sensitive, great listeners, they make fabulous friends. When they're supported in their type of masculinity, they can grow up to be the best teachers, the best pastors, the best worship leaders, incredible counselors. And because I'm married to one, a great husband and father. Because he connects and on a heart level. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with that type of masculinity, but that's the lie of the culture. You know, you're a little gay kid because you'd rather color than get out there and climb trees. It just means he wants to color. That's all it means. And there's another femininity spectrum. On one end, as you could guess, are the girly girls who come out of the womb going, I want a pink receiving blanket. And and I want one of those bands across my hairless skull with the flower on it. And I want you to pierce my ears. And, Mommy, I know I'm only four, but please put nail polish on my nails. Those girly girls are on one end. And on the other end of the spectrum, and some of you know because you came out of the womb there, are girls who are allergic to pink, who want to be the tree climbers, who want to be out there playing with the boys, who love balls and sports, who can be more fanatic football fans than some guys, you know. And these girls get called dyke and butch and lesbo and queer. And there's nothing wrong about their type of femininity. It is a type, a legitimate part of the femininity spectrum. When these girls are supported in their femininity, they can become the most amazing teachers of boys, especially mothers of boys, Boy Scout leaders. They are often gifted leaders of women. Among women. So, you know, and the enemy goes after them as well. And so kids get whispered to by the enemy, you know, push that one off to the side. And that's so many of the women that I minister to, that was their experience. I don't belong in the world of girls. I don't belong in the world of men and, of women. And so I don't feel comfortable, so I'm just going to pull away and disconnect, stay disconnected from them. And so then they're all confused. So that's the understanding of how people just break in their understanding of gender. Something about same-sex attraction in terms of child development is that about age 10, same-sex attraction begins. That's just part of the way God intends for kids to develop. Boys are attracted to boys. Girls are attracted to girls. It is emotional only. It is not a physical. It's non-sexual. There's no sexual component to it at all. This is too early for the hormones to start flooding. It's involuntary. Boys want to connect with boys so that they know they belong in the world of boys. It's just part of the way God makes us. And his plan is that we learn to attach to the same sex as friends, and friends only, before we learn to attach, much bigger task, to learn to attach to the opposite sex, which is so different. Boys and girls, men and women are so different from each other. We have to have some sort of foundation of learning to connect with people that we can understand before learning to connect with people who totally baffle us, which is pretty much the way men see women and women see men. When it comes to gender insecurity, some just don't feel security in their masculinity or femininity, and what they need is help feeling secure. There's often a lack of affirmation from their parents and or their peers, which is why you guys have the great privilege of teaching students how to encourage one another. As the Bible tells us, encourage one another daily. We need to learn to affirm and encourage each other. And as I mentioned, the three A's of attention, approval, and affection, those are legitimate needs that God puts in every human heart, and we need to teach each other to meet those needs. If they go unmet, if kids feel like I'm disconnected from other same-sex peers, and I'm still looking for that place to call home, that place where I belong, if those needs go unmet, then when they hit puberty and suddenly there's a 600% spike in the sex hormones, those desires are going to get sexualized, and suddenly they're going to connect the sexual feelings with what they're longing for, and then you end up with homosexuality. The problem is the kids are so bad about labeling each other with hurtful, untrue lies. And it's so important that you put a stop to that whenever it's in your power. And particularly for those who have been labeled, one of the best things you can do is take sticky, you know, hello, my name is labels. And, for example, one of the things that I do is I'll put a label on myself that says, hello, my name is Christy Brinkley. And what I will say is, you know what? I'm not Christy Brinkley. My name is Sue Bolin. This name tag is not right. It's not true. And so I take it off, and I crumple it up, and I throw it away, and I pick up one that says, hello, my name is Sue Bolin. And I put on a name tag that is true and accurate. And what we need is for students to go, you know, if somebody puts a label on me that isn't true, I have the right to take it off and say, that is not true. Let me tell you who I am. But see, that information has to come from the outside. So what people need to know is, I am a boy, I am a girl, I am beloved of God, I am a child of the King, I am worth dying for, Jesus said so, I am valuable and important. That's who I am. And if you call me something other than who I am, I'm not going to receive it. And the best way that to communicate that is Max Lucado's book, You Are Special, about the Wemmicks, which were little wooden people in this village where they all had a box of stars and a box of dots. And if you were good, they'd go up and put a gold star on you. And if you were bad, for whatever reason, they'd go up and put a gray dot on you. And the bottom line is that this little wooden person, Punchinello, is just covered with gray dots. And he's just so upset about that. And so he meets this wooden person, Lulia, who has no stickers. She has no stars or dots. And he says, where are your stickers? And she goes, I don't have any. Why not? Well, every day I go see Eli, the woodmaker, who made me. And he said, well, I don't want to go see him. She goes, you need to go see him, and you'll find out why the stickers don't stick to me. He goes to see Eli, who says, I made you. You know, looks like you've taken a lot of bad marks. She goes, I didn't mean to, Eli. I'm so sorry. He goes, you don't have to apologize to me, and you don't have to accept those either, because the only thing that matters is what I think of you, not what the other Wemmicks think of you. They're just wooden people like yourself. The only thing that matters is what I think, and I think you are special because I made you, and I don't make mistakes. And he's like, whoa, this is a whole new thing. And he dares to believe that it's true, and at that point, one of the gray dots falls off. And that's what happens. That's how we combat shame, is with the acceptance of grace. And the grace of acceptance. If we believe what God says about us, we don't have to believe the lies that the culture says. And so when I get ugly, ugly emails because of I've written a whole lot on our website, especially about homosexuality, and people say, you are a hate-filled, narrow-minded, bigoted, sad excuse for a Christian. And I look at that and go, not going to stick. I don't accept that. I'm a beloved child of the King. I am a daughter of God. And I'm just agreeing with Jesus and what he says in my word, and what he says in his word. And I refuse to receive that slap in the face. I am not hate-filled. I am love-filled. I'm not narrow-minded. I'm just believing with God. I'm not bigoted. I'm just speaking the truth and you don't like it. And I'm not going to receive that. And I don't, when I write back after I've calmed down, I just want to let them experience some of the grace that I've received from God. I'm not going to receive that. And so we can model that to students. Students who are not secure in their gender don't need to be pointed to gay groups at school or online. What they need is to be affirmed and encouraged to develop their masculinity and femininity. They need to see that when God made them a girl or God made them a boy, their gender was good because God made them that way. And they need other kids to reach out and make them feel like one of the guys or one of the girls. Just tell them they need to finish growing up. Let me skip through this and get to the most important part in terms of where do I go from here about showing grace to strugglers. First of all, it's going to be very, very hard for students to let you know that they struggle. And if you suspect it, don't ever address it head on. Hey, are you gay? Don't go there. You know, that's like going up to somebody else and saying, hey, do you have acne? Or, hey, are you overweight? You just don't go there. What you want to do, though, is be indirect with them and talk about the issues that actually are causing same-sex struggles, which would be the feelings of inferiority, feelings of rejection, feelings of shame, feelings of fear. I'm not good enough as a girl. I'm not good enough as a boy. And talk to them about it. Encourage them in these areas. And some of the best ways you can do that, by the way, especially with guys, is to never have a face-to-face conversation with them, because that's very intimidating to guys to have face-to-face. Guys bond shoulder to shoulder, and it's so much easier to have especially emotionally charged conversations if they're not looking at each other, if you're going for a walk or driving the car or whatever. But if you're going to discuss or ask questions about how are things going with you, about there's going to be senses of disconnect with their parents, disconnect and maybe experiencing the ridicule of their peers, depression, sadness. Talk to them about those issues, because if somebody is struggling with gender security and same-sex attractions, this other stuff is always going to be there. You're not going to have somebody who feels very proud of themselves and is secure in their femininity or masculinity, who is feeling good about life and feeling Jesus and I are good, and yet they've got this huge hole over here. It just doesn't happen that way. So be indirect. Don't use labels and don't allow labels among your students, because they're hurtful, they're false, they're very restricting, because students have a way of living up or down to however we treat them and the things that we say. Labels are very hurtful. Just don't allow it. One teacher decided after hearing this presentation she was going to charge $1 for every time she heard, that is so gay. Because that is it's a dagger in the heart to somebody who struggles, first of all, or to somebody who has a loved one who self-identifies as gay. And you don't know who that is, especially because many churches and many, unfortunately, Christian schools are some of the most unsafe places on earth, to be real. And so you're not going to know who that is. One of the things you can tell them is God didn't make anybody gay. And when people go, well, I've always felt different, I've always felt this way, you could say, did God make you an English speaker? Well, no, but that's what you've always known. God made you a language speaker, but it's because of where you grew up and all, you know, one day after another, all these experiences that got laid on top of each other that made you into an English speaker. How we see ourselves sexually is the same way. Please tell students, don't keep it a secret. That's why this is much done better in a large group as opposed to one-on-one. Don't keep it a secret. Find somebody who can give you truth and encouragement and a safe place to process feelings without feeling shamed or condemned. Let me tell you about a website, www.livehope.org. This website is of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It's an Exodus referral ministry. They have the world's largest online support group for those who struggle. And it's definitely the largest youth. There's 4,000 worldwide people who signed up for the youth forums. Nobody's allowed to give out their last names and any information that would allow them to be found offline. So it's very safe. It's moderated by somebody who's been in ministry for 20 years. This is a great place to send somebody who can talk to people who understand what it's like. And help them embrace their identity in Christ as beloved, special, accepted, and celebrated. And finally, for those that don't struggle, and they're just particularly those that go, ew, gay, this just grosses me out, there needs to be grace, teaching them how to show grace to those that do struggle. Help them to know nobody chooses to have same-sex desires. You always choose to act on it, but the feelings are never, ever chosen. Most people fight against it. I still get emails from people saying, pray that God makes me straight tomorrow. Well, God would love to give you victory about your feelings and your beliefs, but it isn't going to happen tomorrow. Tell them that having crushes and strong feelings is part of adolescence. It doesn't mean somebody is gay. And be compassionate. You don't know who struggles or has a family member who struggles. Be respectful. That means no name calling. It just needs to be a free zone. Finally, Jesus loves people who struggle with same-sex attraction. Let him know that the Lord who says, I will not quench a wick or, hurt somebody who's already hurting.